This is ongoing work. We're hoping to wrap up soon. So it's with Ian Moult, another postdoc at Berkeley, Ian Stewart, faculty at MIT. Before I actually get into this business, and as someone at lunch said, pretend that I actually understand something about regization, I thought I would first tell you about some things I understand a little bit more. Since I'm here till Friday, maybe some of you are interested in some of these things, and I'd be happy to chat more. So before the actual movie starts, just a few trailers. I'm mostly interested in problems in cosmology and particle physics that have to do with a bunch of scales. And one of the things I've been thinking about is heavy WIMPs. So the interesting thing about this is that there's the WIMP mass, and it's much, much heavier than the standard model particles. And for example, this means that for scattering, you have a hierarchy of scales that you have to analyze for dark matter scattering onto a 1 GeV proton. There's QCD in the middle, and there's an interesting effective field theory description of that. Even for annihilation of these heavy WIMPs, actually, where you annihilate to a photon and you're recoiling in, it's a back, you're recoiling against a jet, there's the scale of MW. There's the scale of the dark matter mass, which sets the energy of this. But there's also the bin size of the detector, which sets the size of this jet. So that's one thing in general, basically phenomenological observables for heavy WIMPs. And then the second thing that I think about is a large-scale structure. Here, basically, it's a description of a fluid, and the effective field theory is a way to parametrize deviations from a perfect fluid through a stress tensor. And we'd like to see if, especially if Euclid or LSST gives us very precise data, then these effects should be there when we compare to theory. So the question here is, are we actually ready for precision cosmology? Is a type of big question that one needs to answer. Okay, but for today, I'm going to talk about quark regization. So the central guy in this story is a Glauber mode. This is just a name for a momentum region in diagrams, basically, where this guy, this particle, has transverse momentum much, much greater than the longitudinal components. So for example, to be concrete, let's consider 2-2 scattering. So I have a quark. In the T channel, it exchanges a gluon. And I'm in the so-called Regi limit, where S is much, much greater than T. So these are Mandelson variables. Okay. So this is in the forward limit. And that's the definition of the forward limit. And for the purposes of this talk, I will take this to be much, much greater than lambda QCD. So I'm not going to be worried about non-perturbative effects. The treatment will be fully perturbative. But so if you look at this diagram, there's actually there's no state here with virtuality S, right? So there's S is just the sum of the momenta here squared. There's this guy, which doesn't really know about S. It knows squared of S and squared of S. But S appears in these amplitudes because basically of the difference between the rapidity of this guy, let's say, traveling in the n direction and the n bar direction. And S could appear as, for example, through their momenta dotted. So you should be careful about factors of two there. I'm not careful about factors of two, but OK. So the point is that this Glauber exchange, so the Q of this is really just a Q perp. In this Glauber exchange, there's S and there's T, and we're in this region. And if we want to analyze amplitudes of this, we might be worried about logs of this large quantity. So, right. So for now, I'm going to talk about quarks. We can generalize to hadrons, putting into wave functions, and et cetera. But I'll talk about quarks. The drawback about talking about quarks is I'll have to face some infra divergences, which will show up. But if I were talking about hydrons, then those are regulated. But let's just stick to quarks. So these are quarks. Okay, so, and for, like, there are many ways to resum this. Lots of work poured into that. One of which, for example, is the so-called BFKL. Belitsky. Fadin. Kurev and Lipatov. Okay. And the resummation is important for phenomenology. For example, in forward scattering, you want to resum 1 on x. But also, if you're interested in studying amplitudes, then a lot of the all orders ansatz or results from bootstrap have actually been constrained by Reggie limits. So potentially understanding these Reggie limits properly could also constrain.
What is the Reggie limit?
This is the Reggie limit, S much, much greater than.
What about the Glauber mode?
A Glauber mode is this mode passed, which has longitudinal moment. So it's Q squared is Q perp squared is minus Q vector squared, which I'm calling to be T.
Glauber mode is the exchange
thing. Yes. This exchange thing will have another name later on, but a Glauber mode is, so I'll specify later on exactly what a Glauber mode is. But okay, might as well do it now. Well, no, I'll do it later. But a Glauber mode is a particular mode which has specific momentum scaling. In this case, in this diagram, it's this guy being passed. This is the Reggie limit. Okay. So far, very introductory. The second point where these Glauber modes are relevant is for factorization violation. So when we write down a factorization theorem for some hard scattering process, we identify the momentum regions, which are correspondingly modes, and there could be soft, collinear, and so on modes, and these are, for example, in SET, packaged very nicely, and we can write down factorization theorems. But Glauber modes can also spoil factorization theorems, because if you have two partons coming at each other, or two hadrons coming at each other, the partons that enter the hard scattering process, so this is one parton, let's say this guy scatters, there's some hard scattering process, you have some collinear jets, sprays of radiation, etc. But these guys, the spectator ones that don't really participate in the hard scattering, could also exchange Glauber modes. So if you analyze these diagrams, the Glauber scaling of these modes allow for them to be exchanged with each other. And this is a problem because, well, for one, SET before a recent paper didn't really include the description of such modes, and secondly, in this process now, you have to actually consider not just PDFs of a single object, but now mixed PDFs because they actually talk to each other. So this parton inside one hadron is talking to another parton inside another hadron. So this could potentially spoil factorization, and understanding Glauber modes is key to that. So like I said, in a recent paper, so if you want to learn initial state as well, I just drew it this way, but by Ira and Ian, and I recommend you, it's 200 pages, unfortunately, but I recommend you read it if you want to learn more. It's quite well written, actually. I knew zero before starting this project, and that paper essentially brought me from zero to some epsilon. But so, it's actually useful. And what they've done really is incorporate Glaubers into SET, and now this allows you to use methods of Lagrangian-based and operator-based methods to analyze these two questions. Okay, so in this talk, Like I said, I'm going to pretend that I know what regization is. First, I'm going to give an overview of the classic results for regization of the gluon. And then I'm going to rederive this in the EF key. And then finally, I'm going to talk about quark regization. All right, any questions so far? So, let's see. Okay. So this subject goes way back. In fact, even mid-60s, I think, people started thinking about that particles should regize. Sometime past this year, mid-70s, people actually computed regization up to high orders, especially the Russians. But a particle of mass m and spin j is said to regize. So if in the t-channel there is an exchange of this particle, so you have some amplitude, and in the t-channel there's an exchange of this particle, this particle of mass m and spin j is said to regize if this amplitude is given by s to the alpha t, where this is called the regi trajectory. Okay, so if we pass a gluon and we find that the amplitude scales is this, then we say that the gluon regizes. More than that, you should think of the gluon regizes as meaning it's no longer a gluon, but it's a new particle. And we will see this because specific quantum numbers are being passed here. And for example, two hallmarks of regization is that we will see that if the gluon is regized, then we should be able to derive an effective coupling of a regized gluon to a normal gluon, and this is called the Lipatov vertex. As well as propagators of the regized gluon transformed into, I'll just use the notation slash, where slash is equal to this with some exponentiated factor, which actually is this. So in other words, in this high energy limit of scattering, the gluon is no longer the gluon, but it's some composite particle or some dynamical, you know, I'm missing the word right now, but so that's what it means to regize. Yeah?
Why is the function of t, to exponents
of
function of t, why does that imply that this is no longer gluon?
Any, so,
you see that?
Yeah, we'll, so if, actually I'll go through the first few orders and you'll see this explicitly. But the claim is that to all orders, this can be described as a region or a regized gluon. In other words, you can pass a gluon, two gluons, three gluons, and you can use QCD to describe this. You resum it to all orders, the result collapses such that you could have written down the result pretending that you pass a new particle called a regized gluon with new properties, namely that there is this, that it interacts with regular gluons through the Lipatov vertex, and that its propagator is modified by some exponential factor.
So in this vertex, there are two regions and one.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, let me stick to that notation. Maybe regions would be this squiggly slash. So, okay, so that's the basic definition. So now let's just, the plan for the rest of this talk, or this part of the talk, is to go through the first few orders up to two loop, and just get a feel for how regization is actually derived in classic QCD. And then with that result in mind, well, we'll see actually what regularization means. But more than that, we'll get to appreciate how EFT does it in a different way. So at leading order, all we do is compute this diagram, which gets so that's the result. It's 8 pi alpha s, s over t, ta, ta. So the over t, you just see from passing the propagator, the s is as advertised. Its exponent is 1 because this alpha t is actually 1 plus something called the Regi exponent. And if you evaluate this at 0, this is 1, meaning that because in general, alpha of m squared, the mass of this particle being passed through, should give you back its spin. So the gluon is spin 0, mass 0, it gives you back 1. So that's the result at leading order. So again, this is in the Regi limit. So leading order is quite simple. Let's go to next leading order now. Sorry?
So the lambda is large, right? So that's why you need to resolve. S over t is large.
Yes. So we are in the Regi limit. And like I said, this S comes from actually the dotting of these momenta. So there's actually no, naively, there are no heavy states. And so you think that the scale here is Q. But it really arises because this guy knows about this line and this line, and this dot product appears. But yeah, so this is the first order. We'll see that in general, we could have large logs. So in our approach, we will be interested in looking at the first few orders, like I said, but only at the leading log contributions. So we are interested in contributions that go as s alpha to the n log of n minus 1 s. So this is leading log approximation. So this s just comes from that diagram, and then the rest of the diagram should have this form. So let's just jump right into NLO. So at NLO, you have these diagrams. But these guys, the ones where you only correct the propagator or the vertex, only know about one part of the diagram, or neither of these two momenta. Remember that S appeared there from a dot product of this line being connected to this line. But these diagrams in covariant gauges don't bring you such a factor of S. So these are 0 in the leading log approximation. Okay, so I'm not gonna go through the details of the calculation. It's you just do the calculation, and you find that for this guy, the color factor will go as an octet again, which is good. So there we found the octet because that's the state that's being passed. And here we again find that the sum of these two boxes, or the box and the cross, gives an octet. And yes, you can do the same formalism for the scattering of two gluons, or a gluon and a quark. And the reason being that one of the key assumptions in these derivations is just the iconal approximation, and those things iconalize to in these kinematics, so perfectly fine. In fact, the properties that we're going to derive is really the property of the regiized particle and not the guys passing them. Okay, so like I said, I'm not going to show the calculation, but the first thing that we notice is that it gives us the octet, which is good, And then the second thing we do now is just to use dispersive relations. So this has an imaginary part. We can compute through Katkowski rules, squaring the amplitude, and we end up with the amplitude. So the result, I'm just going to write it down. Is this. So we see that it's proportional to the leading order times an exponent, times the Reggie exponent there, the omega t, times this large log. So this is indeed a leading log contribution. And this exponent is given by this integral. So the only reason I wrote down the integral is because I want you to notice that it's IR divergent. Again, it has to do because we're using quarks and not hadrons, or because we're using. We want to look at regularization at the level of the amplitudes, only looking at the virtual corrections. But if we included the real radiation, then things should be fine. Nonetheless, I've evaluated here for you putting a mass regulator. So with a mass regulator, this is the exponent. We're happy to live with this IR divergence. We know how to interpret it, so we'll keep it as is.
So this is the mass of whom?
I'm putting a mass on these propagators.
So it's mass of the
gluon. Mass of the gluon. Okay, NNLO.
So there are two balls in the answer,
right? Yeah, but this log is just if I use them reg, they're still a log, but you know, if I use them reg, this is some minus t to the 2 epsilon or something. This is the real log that we're resumming. Okay, so at NNLO, we're after alpha s to the 4 log squared corrections now. And again, they come from box and cross diagrams for the same reason that vertex and propagator corrections don't really get enough of the dot products of p1 and p2. So, you know, at this point, you already feel that there's a lot involved in these calculations. You can't just, well, you could brute force calculate everything, go into that limit, and just find this result. But there is some understanding of the diagrams, which ones give leading logs and so on, that'll get you a long way through. So, one. Yeah, so if it were, right. In fact, if you were taking quarks from a hadron, then you would imagine that what's cutting this off is some kind of typical transverse momentum inside a hadron for a quark.
Right.
And that should be set by lambda QCD, for example.
So it depends what you calculate, right? If you calculate the total cross sections, where again, the impact parameters where it would matter would be on the order of T, on the order of total hadronic scales, right?
Yeah.
And so that
that's
order, order one, and the other one is Q.
But for some other questions, it can be.
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so one such understanding of these diagrams is to notice the following. So you can imagine at NNLO there's going to be a lot of diagrams. One class, for example, already gives you 25. And this 25 is really just the squaring of the following amplitudes. So if you imagine these to be on the one side of the cut, if you square them, these are two-loop diagrams. But the way to compute it is not to do all those 25 diagrams, but to notice that actually, with the kinematics that we're dealing with, all of these diagrams, when summed, collapse into what I introduced here as the Lipitor vertex. So what we'll find is that this guy collapses into some effective vertex like this. So this can be done. This can be, you know, you can just compute this and add this up carefully. It's true for the particular kinematics we're working on. And also, it's interesting that you see here that these color factors don't obviously give you FABC here, but they do really collapse into a vertex like this that goes FABC times some kinematic factors. I'm not going to write it down. Maybe one point to note about this is you could consider it being non-local because it's an interaction here at this point. But these kinematic factors actually know about the propagators when we pinch these down. So even if it's an interaction point here, you can it actually knows about some of the momenta here. So it's non-local in that sense.
So when you say this is an analog, because usually to get diagonal, you need to resum infinite ladder. And these are looks like corrections to ladders already.
Sorry, what's the question?
Well, in usual iconal approximation, one really should resum infinite ladders.
Yes.
And then only start including this. So you can implicitly resum those? Or
No. This is an NNLO. So the only diagrams are this, and then the diagrams where I have two paths here and I put a cut here.
Okay. And usually, I thought these things would be dominant compared to this, you know, like
these things?
Yes.
So maybe you're thinking about the resummation to get the iconal phase.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
That's the resummation of ladders going this way.
Yes.
But I'm thinking of, well, I'll draw the ladders out later on. It's a different, actually, they should be related because the imaginary part isn't somehow really what's driving the phase. And the imaginary part is connected to the log because log of minus s is log of s minus I pi. But that's a different calculation. Okay. But the point is, once we have this vertex, then aside from these diagrams, the other diagram that we need to do now is just this effective vertex, and then cut. Okay. And again, I'm not really gonna do the calculation justice because I'm not going to do it explicitly, but it's a nice calculation, and what you find at the end is that M N N L O is equal to M L O 1/2 omega t, the same exponent we found earlier, times this log. And
just to make sure I understand, so really what the iconal does, it kind of exponentiates all of your m's, right? Is it
m's?
Well,
at the end of the day, so we have the first few results, and if you look at the first few results, we could guess that the full m is just m l o times e to the s. No, if I bring down the exponent, then it's going to be this. Right, it's exponential of a log, so s goes down, exponent stays here. So based on the first three orders, you can guess that it exponentiates into this object. So that's what we're heading.
And iconal is exponentiation of this whole thing, right? Or no? So you can calculate an expression for the iconal phase, correction to iconal phase shift, right? So
iconal is a sum of these ladders.
Right.
Which is in this. It should be in here.
No, because if I even look at your leading node amplitude, right? Before in the logs, in the regime S over T is large, this is large, right?
Mm-hmm.
And iconal just resums kind of that.
Yeah, I think they're related. Yeah, I should be able to tell you the precise difference, but I'm not remembering right now.
Where does the non-Athenian character shows up?
Good.
Because you could do many of these things in QED as well, right?
Yeah, so in QED, if you pass the photon here, this guy vanishes, the sum of the box and the cross.
Mm-hmm.
This guy survives mainly because of the color structure. Otherwise, it's zero. What regiizes in QED is the electron. So you can pass an electron and that regiizes, but a photon doesn't. So I want to go back to your question, but maybe later. So
I have a question.
Yeah.
In the initial formula for regi, you wrote m goes as s to the t, or s to the alpha t.
Yeah.
Right.
So this is.
Yeah, but if you expand that, you end up getting log of s to many different powers at each different order, right? So. I feel like next to leading order, I should be seeing log s to the 2 or something like that.
Yeah, that's a typo. Thank you.
Okay.
Good. So like I said, adding these up require, I don't know, you might call them miraculous cancellations, even to obtain actually the octet structure that's proportional to leading order, or it requires certain things combining. And also one other interesting thing is actually individual diagrams contain logs at a higher power than log squared, like log cubed, but they cancel. In other words, a lot of things have to line up to get this result. So we've worked up to 2-loop, and this is the result that's suggested by that analysis. But let me just quickly sketch how to go to all orders. Or maybe not, because, I think I have time. So the trick is just to think of the corrections in terms always of this collapsing into an effective vertex. So if you encounter a gluon ladder that goes like this, you know that this should combine with, for example, this guy, etc., to give you just an effective vertex like this. So, and then you can prove that the scattering of two quarks plus n gluons is just going to be a ladder with n rungs of this effective vertex. OK. So now with these ingredients, you can do an induction. In fact, we've proven the base cases of leading order, next to leading order, etc. What we can then do is assume the result for regization. And then build on that one more rung and solve that differential equation and show that it's actually satisfied. So that differential equation looks like roughly we're trying to solve for this kernel, and these are now regiized. So we're trying to solve for this kernel, let's call it F, and we're just expressing it as regiized gluons being passed, plus F and one more rung. And you can show that F actually has exactly a pole at the exponent. So meaning that what's inside F is a regiized gluon, because the solution gives you one pole at that value. And so you can show, by solving this equation, that you indeed get this result. just higher order logs come for the ride when you do this analysis. But this is essentially the result. So you assume this result, but you get it back in the end, and that tells you that your induction process was correct. So what we learned was that the gluon regiizes to all orders, and there are two main hallmarks to this. One is that its interaction with regular gluons is given by, so there is a regular gluon vertex given by the Lipatov vertex. And two, that the amplitude exponentiates in this way, which you can think of as the propagator for a regiized gluon being just the propagator for a regular gluon carrying this exponentiation. So if I had started our leading order calculation there, but instead of using a regular gluon propagator, I had already used the regi propagator, then I just get the result immediately. So that's what it means for a gluon to regiize. And now I will. Yes.
Are all of those just gluons? None of them are regiized, or they are? Yeah.
Good. These are all regiized.
Oh, those are. Oh.
Because remember, the effect of the ladders is to regiize the gluon, but in step two, you want to assume that the gluon is regiized. That's a step two in the induction, and so when you draw these diagrams, you regiize them, and you find that when you actually solve this consistency equation, the result is regiized, so that the result is true. The assumption is consistent. So that analysis, if you apply it to, let's say, hadrons, and you consider, instead of the amplitude level, a cross-section level, then you would derive, using the same techniques of this kind of recursive integral equation, the BFKL equation. So if you want the BFKL, you can also think of it as, you can use it to prove regiization if you apply it to an octet being passed at the amplitude level. Okay, so now I want to look at gluon regiization from the EFT. So omega of t?
Yeah.
At leading log approximation, it's times the IR divergent object.
So just a constant.
Oh, good. So we said that. Well, yeah, that this is the result. Then that next leading log, it gets corrections and so on, alpha squared. Okay, so I have a bunch of preamble notes for SCT, but I'm gonna try to skip over those. The details, of course, important when you're doing the calculation, but to give you the flavor of how to derive this from EFT, I think the details we can skip and we can talk about it after. But I think this is, well, I'm not sure about the terminology, but this is the first order. Yeah, I think this is called linear. Fine.
Isn't it that it's usually mass proportional to spin or mass squared proportional to spin, something like that?
Right. Yeah.
That's so cool.
So the actual trajectory was alpha t, which is 1 plus this omega.
Okay.
And this omega, before you did the integral, was actually linear in t times some integral. I don't know if that's where the name is coming from. But
okay.
What's confusing me is this integral actually brings down a 1 on t. That's why it's a log. But I don't want to. Perhaps if I were careful and actually did the real radiation corrections, then this should actually give me a linear t result. In other words, I just don't want to I have to be careful about what I say because I have infra divergences. Right.
Basically, the question is whether one sees from this perturbative calculation there is a string, right? The linear energy trajectory on things in terms of kind of spectrum, that's the signature of having a relativistic string there.
Yes.
So the question, do we see it from this calculation?
Yeah, I think what you're asking is this result, that it's actually 1 plus t times something.
Right, yeah, thank you. Yeah. So,
okay, so one of the central results of the paper by Ira and Ian was to write down a Lagrangian for the Glauber mode. So in SET, there's a bunch of modes, right? So there's the collinear, soft, etc., and then there are hard modes and Glauber modes. These guys are represented in the low energy effective field theory by actual degrees of freedom, so they're actually in the game. These guys are integrated out, and in particular, this leads to potentials or operators that represent potentials, and that's one central result of their paper, is to write down these potentials, and of course, writing down these potentials in a Lagrangian means equipping it with a regulator. So in particular, insertions of these potentials give you singularities on the light cone coordinates, or rapidity singularities, and you have to regulate those. And also, you have to be careful when you introduce a new mode here that they don't overlap with other modes. So there's subtraction schemes to introduce as well, but I'm not going to go through those details. So let me just go ahead and motivate how to write down these operators. So we're looking for Lagrangian that modifies the SET Lagrangian. It's Glauber Lagrangian called. And the way to write them is, of course, we know our degrees of freedom here, we know our symmetries, we write everything down, and then constraint coefficients by matching. Before doing a more detailed look, we can expect that these operators have the following form. So
What
did you
do so far?
That was
at any n or like the number of colors.
Is
it playing a role in what you did?
NC?
Yeah.
NC is CA.
But the expressions remain the same.
Yeah, I mean, you just have to generalize TA cross TA to some SUN.
Okay.
Because as you saw there, what do Glauber modes do? They connect modes of different rapidities. So in particular, collinear modes n, labeled by this subscript n, are modes in the collinear direction. So they have, or parameterized fluctuations around the collinear direction. So they have momenta that scale in light cone coordinates as 1 lambda squared lambda, for example. While soft modes scale as lambda, lambda, lambda. And so Glauber potentials, which are represented by this 1 on p perp squared, connect collinear and soft rapidities, or all three of them. If OS here, for example, were proportional to p perp squared, then that would just connect ON and ON bar, which is the case that we looked at there earlier. But we know that the operators have to be of this form. NN and bar are just two different.
What exactly is the energy then transverse momentum then longitudinal momentum?
If I have a vector,
right.
I can decompose it into light cone coordinates. And these are the components. So this is the last component, the perp component. This is the We can call it the plus component and the minus component. So this guy is collinear in, let's say, the n direction, has a large momentum in the n direction. So that would be, say, this guy. This is the plus component. So it's momentum decomposed on the light cone. Okay, which is important because, okay, so we already saw, okay, so these are the type of operators we need to write down. Well, at this point, let's do an example. Let's go back to our leading order result, which gave us U n bar. Let me be very schematic here, but so this amplitude will have three factors. One will be the n, which is essentially just the spinner of this guy in the n direction. And one factor will be the n bar. So these, for example, are the collinear matrix elements of these collinear operators should reduce to these guys. And then matrix element of this soft operator should reduce to this guy. So let me just write down some operators. So for quark, so for example, this is the operator On that we need, such that if you take the matrix element of that, it just reduces to this structure here, which, you know, if I wrote it out, it's just U n bar slash over 2 TBUN. Okay, so the Glauber Lagrangian will be made out of these kinds of collinear operators. There are gonna be analogs for n bar, and there's gonna be analogs for gluons as well. So for example, a gluon one would be so this is describing a collinear gluon going in the n direction, whereas this is describing a collinear quark going in the n direction. So for n, for collinear scattering, then these operators are easy to write down. We basically have the building blocks of SET. We write them down. We just know that there's some object going in a collinear direction. The tricky part is really determining this OS function. But like I said, there's nothing to do but the standard recipe, which is to write everything down and then constrain it by matching. And the result is, it's a long operator. I'm not gonna write it down right now. But let me describe to you some features of it. For example, with these three operators, if I wrote down on, 1 and t perp slash, sorry, p squared os, 1 and p squared on bar, I can, for example, compute this operator with one gluon emission, and the form of os, which is, it's quite long, but it just involves some Wilson lines and gluon degrees of freedom, will give me exactly back the Lipatov vertex that we know. So just by writing down operators, building operators from the bottom up, knowing your degrees of freedom and writing it down, you get the Lipatov vertex. And the non-trivial checks that they did was they matched onto amplitudes with 0, 1, or 2 gluon emissions, and they also did one loop matching. So there are some instructive points about one loop matching. I'm not going to go through them anymore because I don't have time, but there is one very key point that I cannot skip. Okay, so that key point is that for one loop matching, remember that for one loop matching in the full theory, the S over T came from boxes and crossed diagrams. Here, one loop matching in the effective theory, if I drew out the diagrams, the boxes and cross are now jumbled into all sorts of diagrams with vertices and so on. But there's an interesting way in which the log of S minus T appears. It appears in the following way. So log of ST appears from a combination of other logs in which appears this nu. Nu is kind of like the mu renormalization scale, but instead of a UV or Nyer divergence that's regulated by Dimreg, it's a rapidity divergence. So it's a divergence in, for example, your VKZ integral. And of course, if you see something like this, then it's quite obvious how to resum log of S minus T. What we're used to seeing are logs that combine into some large log that we want to resum, but with mu's. And the way to resum that is to define an RGE in mu space. So in this case, what we found was we computed the one loop diagrams. Some of them have divergences in rapidity directions in integrals, so light cone divergences. If we assign a regulator to them, then there is this new parameter that appears in logs. And if we can define an MS bar-like renormalization for that nu, then we can derive anomalous dimensions to resum logs of S minus T. Yes. So let's say I'm interested in the scattering of a collinear object with this Glauber exchange. And the relevant operator would be on 1 on p perp squared os 1 on p perp squared on bar. As we said, if I evaluate matrix elements of this, this artificially depends on this new function, this new parameter, because I had to regulate these light cone divergences. As you say, physics cannot depend on nu, so I somehow has to set the scale. Of course, if I added all orders, or they cancel in between each other, as we see there. But I don't want them to cancel, otherwise I just recover that log. If, for example, I pick nu to be square root of minus t, this soft function in the middle only depends on t, because that's the function that describes this middle rapidity object, which knows about t. And so the logs would be minimized in the matrix elements of this. But these guys know about square root of s. So the logs would not be minimized there. OK, but let me do that anyway, and then use the following. So because I know that, as you said, for example, before renormalization, the bare operator should not depend on nu, then I can derive an RG equation. With some anomalous dimension given by calculated in the usual way. So instead of divergences that go as 1 over epsilon in dim reg, I am now looking for divergences that one goes as 1 on eta. So I still have dim reg in the game. They're 1 over epsilons. But I'm interested in divergences in 1 on eta, which are related to log of nu's through an expansion in eta. And that gives me an anomalous dimension. So this is just the usual story of just replace mu with nu, and this is the usual story of RG, resummation. So with this, I find that if I actually wanted to evaluate this as at the scale square root of minus t, then I can do the following to resum. So I can evaluate the middle at square root of minus t. This side, I can evaluate at square root of minus t, but because of this RG evolution, I can relate an object at nu square root of minus t and at nu 2 square root of s by running. So if I run that, what I find is that this is now square root of s, and what I gain here is a factor of s minus t to the negative of the anomalous dimension. And explicit calculation shows that negative of the anomalous dimension is just the Reggie exponent that we found earlier. So just to summarize, in the EFT, what's done is you add Glauber modes into your theory of soft and collinear modes. And that's done through this Glauber-Lagrangian. The Glauber-Lagrangian is thought of as potentials generated from integrating the Glauber modes out.
Can I ask you, is this Lagrangian sort of phenomenological, or it's a Bingo derived?
It's derived from the bottom up. The effective theory gives you the symmetries and the building blocks. And you write everything you can write down.
So it has some free parameters?
Though, right? It has some free parameters. Oh, yeah, good point. So it has some free parameters, and then you match onto QCD. So you compute, this is the first thing you can compute. You match onto QCD, that fixes some free parameters. You derive as many constraints as you need to solve for the system of free parameters. Turns out that the way they've written it, all the free parameters are one. And you can ask, what if you match at one loop? Will those free parameters get corrected? And the answer, interestingly, is no. So the operator is all orders. And the hand-wavy way of seeing this is because loops represent integrating out one on virtualities S, and those should just give you one on S's and not logs. But these diagrams carry these logs, so they cannot correct these diagrams. But you can just also see that one loop correction. So if you fix your Lagrangian by these amplitudes, you can compute that one loop, and they just exactly agree. So at the end of the day, this Lagrangian has no more free parameters. And it's claimed to be all orders. So if you want to derive the subleading trajectories or subleading power for edgeization, then you have the crank. You just have to be powerful enough to turn the crank. But there's no more business of going into diagrams and being smart about organizing it and you know.
You don't have a high-dimensional grade, that's right in this paper.
Yes. But again, as long as you know your degrees of freedom and your symmetries, then you just write them down and you constrain them again. So you can go to subleading power too. So they represent potentials. That's it. So I'm out of time, I guess. Maybe just a minute to describe actually what the quark regization is. Essentially, the quark regization is, of course, the same. What was new was we had to write down fermionic type Glauber potentials. But again, you know, in the language of EFT, you know, your building blocks and your asymmetries, you write them down. So let me just actually write it down, just so you see this result. So our Glauber operator for the fermion looks like this.
So now it responds from quark exchanging with the channel?
Yes.
So when you read diagrams, we do something.
And all the other permutations, so for example, this. So they have the characteristic signature of having these Wilson lines, which the gluon also does, but it's just lengthy. I didn't have time to write them down. But they describe basically integrating out stuff that connect to the N and then bar direction. So that's how you generate the Wilson lines. And then the rest, like I said, you know your degrees of freedom, and you know the dimension of the operator, so you write down. The first thing you can write down is a momentum. It has to have a slash, because it's a fermionic operator. And then a gluon. And this thing, if you go crack through the whole business again, compute the rapidity divergent diagrams, what you find is that the anomalous dimension is just alpha CF over CA times the gluon anomalous dimension. So it's a classic result that quark regularization is given by the same trajectory except with CA replaced by CF. It's actually interesting when you go through the calculation because it's not quite obvious that the factors of CA will drop out at the end of the day. And it's also interesting because when you do these calculations, certain subleading operators mix as T products to give you the correct anomalous dimension. But other things you could do with the EFT that they've tried is to derive the BFKL and also to derive this iconal phase. One thing that's still confusing us about the iconal phase for the quark is it doesn't really represent. So in the gluon, these ladders represent sort of, if you want a classical picture, there's one source of these shock waves and another one passes through.
So the iconal phase, is it just for some of these regularized gluons?
I think so, yes. Yes. That's correct. Exactly. But here, you're passing a quark through. So first of all, if you count the dimensions of this operator, including the measure, it actually contributes in a subleading power than gluon exchange, which is obvious, you know, which you can make sense of because you're passing a quark through. It's not quite clear if there's an interpretation of the summation of these quark globers in terms of an iconal phase or a shockwave picture. I guess the analogous question you can ask is, do fermions ever mediate a long-range force? Like, can I have a Coulomb force that's mediated by a fermion? If you want to be, yeah, well, you can pass two fermions together that has a scalar component. Turns out you can derive a potential, but it's suppressed. And it's a similar thing we're finding here. So I wish I had more time. I guess I had more material than I thought I had. But the details are actually pretty fun to look at. So if any of you are interested, I'm around till Friday.
So are you mostly looking at this from the theory because it's interesting, or because it's the kind of thing you need to do in actual practical PCD calculations?
Even the actual gluon regularization itself doesn't really have any practical. Maybe BFKL does, or resummation of these kinds of logs for other processes like Hadron-Hadron collisions. But it's, the short answer is right now it's more of a theory thing. There's this framework and you want to understand how it works and like it tells you about the structure of QFT and so on. Two, these results, as I said earlier, are interesting for people doing amplitudes potentially because the Regi limits can constrain amplitudes. In fact, some of the ansatz, I forget which ones, were heavily constrained by some work on gluon regularization. So you go into this kinematic limits and you need to find that they exponentiate correctly. So it could be true for passing a quark through. The problem with a quark is, like I said, it's subleading. So you have to force certain final states. So for example, if you're going quark glue to quark glue, the gluon channel regularization still dominates over this. But so those are some of the you know, benefits. One long-term goal that I know I'm not thinking about right now, but some of these people are, is that, like I said, so there's two parts of what globbers do, right? Forward scattering, which is the resummation of these logs. And second is factorization violation. So to them, writing down this Lagrangian is just the first step. They want to actually know if they can, you know, have a if-then kind of theorem when globbers drop out of some scattering or not. So in other words, now that you have this description for globbers, can you, I guess as a baby case, rederive factorization proofs that were done by Sturman and so on, and B, go beyond that and actually have a systematic way of seeing when globbers participate in a diagram or not. And that has, of course, consequences for factorization.
Cool, let's thank the speaker again.